Hello and welcome to another episode of Transcontinental Overload. I'm Stephanie, your host, and I have a huge episode for you today. I've actually been dying to share it, but I've been so busy that I haven't had time to edit it and record the intro and all that kind of thing. So I've just been desperate to finish it. One problem is that I still don't have a dedicated space to record my interviews. My new house here in New Jersey is all wooden floors and high ceilings, and which is very beautiful, but very, very bad for recording things. Luckily, of course, it's an American house, which means I have a nice walk-in wardrobe or closet, as I should say. And so that's where I currently do all my recording and anything voice related. As you've probably noticed, today's episode is a very long one. In fact, it's my longest one yet. And let me say a few things about that. I know I've said this before, I've explained this before. Sometimes there are episodes or conversations that just flow so well, and there is so much to say. And the story today is one of those stories that just needed to be told. And my guest kept apologizing for talking so much. And I just kept saying to her, no, keep going. This is all so valuable and interesting. And also, she is an amazing storyteller. And I promise you, you will not even notice that it's a long episode. And if you don't have time to listen to it in one go, just break it up. No big deal. I don't want to give too much away, but if you have a soft spot for romantic stories, you are in the right place. I definitely belong in that category, so I lapped up every word of it, and I promise you will too. My guest today is Casey, another girl from Texas. I know, they just keep coming. She is originally from Houston and has made Italy her home, Tuscany to be precise. Her story covers so many expat topics, from loneliness to dealing with bureaucracy, language barriers, obstacles when it comes to traveling, of course, being affected by the pandemic and the massive impact that had on her family. We also talk about dating abroad and all the pitfalls of that. And I feel like anybody who has ever lived abroad can relate to something in Casey's story, and anybody considering moving abroad should definitely listen to it. It is also a story about how you can overcome your challenges and how you can grow from those challenges and make them work for you to help you find your happy ending. Enough said, let's listen to Casey's story. Welcome, Casey, to Transcontinental Overload. So happy to have you.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
So, Casey, you're in Tuscany. Let's go back to, because you're, as we can all hear, you're American.
Yes.
How does an American end up in Tuscany?
Okay, well,
let's,
I guess
jump in.
The story starts farther back from me arriving in Tuscany, because I actually, when I arrived in Italy, it was actually into Rome. So I started my journey, I guess it's almost 6 years now ago. I was working for a big public accounting firm in the States, in Houston specifically. And one of my career goals was to go on one of these work abroad programs for a couple of years. I obtained my CPA license. That was kind of my last needing to check the box item. So I did that. And I applied to come work abroad for what I thought was going to be 2 years. So my work then, I started applying. The process is a little complicated, but you kind of put your countries of interest. Obviously, it's not like you get to select where you want to go. For me, I had zero foreign language experience. So I was choosing countries that spoke predominantly English, you know, Netherlands. I didn't really want to do UK, that part, just because of the weather. I'm from Houston. I'm used to
Heat.
I know your experience with Texas. So I wanted to go somewhere a little cooler than there, but not rainy, rainy lands. But anyway, long story short, during the application process, it was very quick into the process that my partner that I was working for at the time came to me, and one of the clients that I was already working on, he said, you know what, that I just got off the phone with the guys in Italy, and they're actually looking for someone. Would you be interested in going to Italy? And of course, I mean, when people hear Italy,
yes, you instantly have those pictures in your head, right? Yes,
exactly. Yeah. So before I said yes, I said, okay, you know, obviously I don't speak Italian. And he said, no, I talked to him. He said, it's not a problem, which was the farthest from the truth, but we'll get there later. But anyway, so that's, I guess, how I got to Rome. And then throughout my process in Rome, I met my now husband, who lives here in Tuscany, and came here.
That's yes.
That's a very short version of my story, but
yeah. So basically, when you started your job, you had that idea in your head that you wanted to spend some time abroad at some point. Had you been outside of the US? Had you been traveling before?
Yes. So my mom we were fortunate enough growing up. She has made me a very well-cultured person growing up, starting from when I was really little. I think, you know, we used to go on cruises, Mexico, South America, but when I think the millennial, we went to New Zealand. That was my first really huge trip.
Oh, wow.
And I think that was the first time I was like, this is awesome, seeing these new places and how people live so differently, the time change, the season, obviously. I was so young, and we went for Christmas and we were at the beach during Christmas, which was crazy for me. I had traveled a lot. My association with Italy was also very strong. So when I was in college, my mom and I went, I was having a rough year. I can't remember which year of college it was, but she booked us on one of those, you know, Trafalgar bus tours around. We rode the bus with the lanyards around our neck,
you know,
the big tour groups, the flags. And I make fun of them now because I'm here and I see them all the time. They're part of my life now, but that was me. And during our trip, we went around the whole country, made stops, various places. We actually stopped here in Tuscany one day. We, you know, stopped at this really magical castle. And during that time, we met the owner here and we're just so infatuated with them. We went back to America. And I think it was 6 months later, it's kind of embarrassing how quickly we came back, but I think it was 6 months later, my mom said, do you want to go back to Italy again and do like another stay, but do it on our own this time? We'll rent a car, we'll drive around. And that probably of memories with my mother, those are some of the most fondest memories, because we were driving a van. It had this huge gash down the side. She was driving, I was navigating. I'm so not a maps person. You know,
I can relate.
These are the paper maps. I'm trying to navigate my mother's foreign country. Anyway,
oh, I love it.
We came back. We stayed at this place. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. But anyway, so long story short, when my boss said about Italy, I did actually have an idea. Of course, this was vacation Italy that I had in mind. So again, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, I would love to. Let's go drink wine all day and eat pasta and it'll be so much fun.
And you'll just pick up the language in
weeks. Yeah. Of course, then I ordered Rosetta Stone. But anyway, the language, like I told you, they explained to me it wasn't a big deal at the beginning. So anyway.
But that's so nice. I love how, I mean, yay for your mom, because honestly, I think this is something once that seed is planted, you have that in you, I think. And whether it's just traveling a lot and spending all your spare time and cash on going on vacations, or whether you actually go and live abroad or work abroad, I think it's something, you can definitely plant that in childhood. And I love how that's turned out for you. So I bet she was thrilled when you said you were going to go to Rome.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. So she probably had her first ticket bought before I even actually moved here.
So you said the beginning, it was kind of a rough ride, starting work and just being thrown into that whole new system and not speaking the language. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So I beforehand, I think I had prepared as much as humanly possible to move over here, which we were just talking a minute ago about how you can never really be prepared. No one can prepare you. The company that I was working for, which is amazing. I'm so thankful for every step and everything that they did. But you would think that they would have had a little bit more for me in terms of preparation for coming here. But I was, Googling every possible thing I could find, every blog, every, which neighborhood to live in Rome, and, everything I was really finding about life in Italy was saying, don't trust anything on the internet. Wait till you get there and you'll figure it out. And because I think now that I've been here so long, I know it's because of the bureaucracy. The country itself has it, but then what I've found, especially now that I'm in a new region now, but even each city has its own rules, and nothing is consistent and nothing is straightforward. And I think I could be misspeaking here. I want to say that the company had an American in the Rome office before, but I really don't think so. I think most of the representatives from the states that had gone to Italy had all gone to Milan. And so again, like I really was scratching. There was one other person at the time from the New Jersey office that was in Milan. So I was in contact with her, and bless her heart, I was sending her so many emails and questions and everything. But again, like there wasn't much that she could give me because she wasn't in Rome. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I asked the company for a few advanced weeks between arriving and starting so that I could get all this stuff sorted out, where to live and do all that.
Because also all that is, it's not easy to get that done outside of working hours, because, and I think this is the basic thing for especially dealing with bureaucracy and, they just do the things that they know, and they don't have any understanding of how it's done in other countries. So they don't know that someone might come in and not know how it works. I think that's always the basic kind of, they'll just, well, that's how it's done. So they expect you to know, not realizing every country has a completely different set of how the order of things. And so it's not so much like the company, that's, there's nothing really they can do, but all the, Oh God. Yeah. So that's a nice thing to try and have some time prior to actually
Well,
working.
it was good. So what happened was I flew into they made me fly into Milan instead of Rome, because that's where they were going to handle my immigration paperwork, which later came to find out once I put two and two together. I'm like, wait, I'm living in Rome, which is the capital of the country, and you're telling me that it's better to do my paperwork in Milan? Why? Well, you come to find out things don't function all that well. What I tell people is the farther north you go here, the more things function, the closer you get to up there. And then the further south you go, anyway, so I flew into Rome. They have this process with your visa that once you arrive within 8 days, you have to go to the police department in person and declare that you're here. Okay. So within my 2 week period that I asked to come and find a place to live, I spent 5 of those days in a hotel room in Milan waiting for my appointment at the police department to go stamp a piece of paper saying, hello, I'm here. So this was my first entrance into bureaucracy at its finest, just wasting precious time. You know what I'm saying? I'm still so panicked. Again, I had no place to live in Rome. So I arrived in Milan with all of my stuff to survive me the first 2 months. And not just stuff, but my work clothes, my regular clothes, some of my home good things, because I really wasn't sure when my crate would arrive and all of that kind of stuff. So I had so many bags. I remember when the guy picked me up at the airport, he was looking at me like, I don't think I'm going to fit all this stuff in my car. He was in this small Mercedes sedan. Anyway, So long story short, I finally got that done, and I took a train. I took a train from Milan to Rome. Remind you about all the luggage I just told you I had. Okay. Four huge bags, getting onto a train by myself. Nobody helps you. I mean, unless you're like elderly or pregnant here, nobody's going to jump out. And I'm from Southern Texas, where hospitality is, you know, number one, let the door shut on you. No, some people helped, but it was a little shocking. So anyway, I arrived in Rome. They put me up in this long stay place, which was by my office. In theory, again, was nice because they were thinking, okay, well, she'll be right here, but it was pretty far from where I knew I wanted to live, which was in the city center. So I had to take taxis back and forth going to look at houses. But anyway, when I got to Rome, they, at the office had this, what actually she's still so close to me. One of the secretarial assistants, in the office, she actually helped me for a week, I think, look online at apartments. I mean, this is not her job. She's still doing her job for the person she works for.
Yeah.
But she was helping me look at these apartments. I would say, okay, I want to call this place. She would call them. She would set up a time with me. Then like she would go with me to look at them.
Oh, wow.
She's so nice. She was one of the people that made the whole process seem a lot less scary. But anyway, we started looking at places. I actually found the place I ended up moving into was, I think, the first or second place I looked at, which was nice. It was right next to the Vatican. Nice and modern, really, really small, but it's okay because I wanted certain amenities such as air conditioning. Again, I'm from Houston. I'm like, I cannot live in a place without air conditioning. How is that possible?
Yeah.
So I found the house, then, you know, I won't go into all the details, but it was very complicated in the sense that like, once I wanted to sign with the house, they needed a deposit, and they wanted the deposit to come from a bank account, an Italian bank account, which the bank wouldn't allow me to have an account until I had an address. And I couldn't, you know, it was like,
I don't know why that is, but I mean, it's the same here. We had this whole, the social security number and a bank account, and you can't have one without the other. So it's like, how do we even?
Exactly.
And so it's like, why can't that be easier? I don't know. And people tell these stories from different countries, and you say
same everywhere.
It's the same everywhere. It doesn't make any sense. But I've heard about Italy being one of the worst.
A little hard. So anyway, I showed up to sign my contract with cash in my pockets. Mm-hmm. Stephanie, I was walking through Rome with I don't even know how many thousands of euros in my pockets.
Oh my God.
Just like terrified that I was going to get mugged. Yes. You know, I was very aware that I was in Rome and pickpocketing and theft and things like that. And so I remember when I showed up to sign the document, and they looked at me like, she's pulling all this money out of her pockets. But anyway, we got it done.
But you must have, by the time you actually started work, you must have been exhausted and just.
Yeah, honestly, I was really ready to start working because for me, once I started going through all that, I was so overwhelmed with everything that I thought, okay, you know what? At least what I'm doing here is the same as what I was doing in Houston. So maybe
you can do something you're capable of doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was confident in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first day of work, I remember so clearly that I came into the office and met everyone. And I think they had a meeting that day that was scheduled, and they asked me to lead it. One of the managers said, okay, we want you to lead this meeting. And they sent me the PowerPoint deck, and it was in Italian. And I was just flabbergasted at how, so this was kind of my first realization of, wow, this is not going to be what I thought it was, you know? So anyway,
what did you do? I mean,
I actually don't think I went to the meeting. I did. There were other meetings. I went to the meeting and I said, well, look, I can't read these, so I'll just go and listen. But again, the whole meeting was in Italian. Everyone was speaking in Italian. So I sat there very patiently, but you know, I feel like from, I'm not sure, I've listened to so many of your episodes. I'm not sure. Have you been in other countries yet where you didn't speak the language, or have they all been English speaking countries?
Yep. So far I haven't, I've traveled to countries, and even that to me is, I hate not being able to understand what is being said. And, you know, yeah, you can always learn some phrases in advance, but not business language, and not spoken at the normal pace and by people who don't necessarily want to consider the fact that you don't speak the language. So, and it's bad enough to be somewhere for a couple of days and not be able to understand. It's I can't even.
No, for me, I didn't want to seem disrespectful, but when you're sitting there for a period of time and they're just these words in another language, it's almost like it glazes you over. It's very draining. It was emotionally draining for me.
Well, and from a psychological point of view, it makes you feel inferior and incompetent, and you don't want to come across as that because you just took that job because you want to show what you can do and contribute. And and then it's like, well, if you can't even express what you're thinking, people have no idea how smart you are and how, you know, so that's just, what a downer.
That was really it, because I was, again, brought over there to be in a sense, a specialist in this area of knowledge. And I was contributing nothing, absolutely nothing, because I felt like even when I did speak, I mean, everyone of course had a basic knowledge of English because we are working for this multinational company, but of course their local meetings are going to be in Italian. Of course, now in hindsight, looking back of it, yes, I wouldn't expect someone to come to America and us have our meetings in Italian, but I don't know why I wasn't really prepared for
it. Again, this is one of those things, and you people, you know, someone was thinking of you and thinking you'd be great for this job without actually thinking it through. This is for people who are not linguistically, I don't know, interested, or they don't really know how hard it is to master a language to the degree that you can work in it, because that's a whole other ball game.
Than surviving.
Yes, exactly. So I think, but also it must be, that must have made it difficult at the beginning to make friends or just kind of socialize with people from work. Because I mean, naturally, when you move somewhere for work, that's the first people that you meet, and you're kind of hoping to connect with a few maybe. And so that must have made it more difficult.
That's a very good point, because for me, coming from Houston, our office for the company that we worked with, everyone was so close and integrated. We had so many events, so many team building things, parties at our partners' houses, you know, there were their Christmas parties and, you know, big celebrations. It was bearable to be at work for 14 hours because you enjoyed the people you're around, and everyone was friends. Usually each team had such a different dynamic, and they figured out, I don't know how they did it in Houston. If anyone's listening from the office, I mean, kudos to them, because I feel like they just did such a good job of placing the personalities in all the teams. We were a huge office, but I never worked with a team where I wasn't friends with them. And so, yes, coming in, that was a huge shock for me, because, you know, spending those hours there and not being able to connect with those people, it was a very, very difficult. And again, like I told you, that's what I was expecting to be the easy part of my move, because
well,
I just kind of expected that slide, you know.
And I guess it's also different if you move by yourself. So if you move as a couple, for example, I feel sometimes it's easier to cope. Even if you don't connect during the day, you come home and there's someone you can vent to, or who can empathize, or maybe goes through the same thing. And also, I don't know what it is, but when you're a single woman, it's it's, you don't get invited out to stuff as much as maybe a couple would.
Right. Right.
But it's, I don't know what it is about that, because people, you know, there's, it's just.
Yeah. It just happens that way.
So it just takes a bit longer, or you have to work so hard to get a foot in the door. And exactly. So I guess that must've been super tough. So A, you need to figure out how to do this with Italian and learn as much of the language as you can, and then also try and make some friends. So how did that progress?
Yeah, so I think,
because I mean by that point you must have been like, why am I doing this, should I just go home? Yeah.
Yes, it was before, like I said, I didn't even say, I started at the beginning of November, and I know that before the new year I was already calling my parents, mm-hmm. of course, the first one, saying, I need to come home. Like, this was mm-hmm. such a poor judgment call on my part, but no. So there was a partner in the office there in Rome who had actually done the same type of swap mm-hmm. in America. So he was so helpful to me to kind of vent to and work with and communicate my unhappiness. And he immediately helped me get some language lessons set up. So that was the first step, was I need to do some lessons and I need them to be taken seriously by everyone. Mm-hmm. The difficult thing there was the number of hours that they were working. So, you know,
And then again, this is something people don't appreciate, that you, after a long day at work, you're exhausted, and then you're expected to go and spend
language lessons. So, you know, they weren't leaving the office until 9 o'clock at night. Oh. And mm-hmm. so I finally had to say, look, I don't remember how many days a week it was. I think it was two at the beginning, which I found out was essentially doing nothing for me, but yeah. I would leave work and go straight to my language lesson. So I would leave at like 6:30 or 7, go straight to my language lesson. It would take me 30 minutes to get there in the Rome traffic at best, and then do an hour and a half lesson. I'm still not getting home till 10:30, 11, you know, doing the language lessons. But anyway, the point is, at least I was starting to do that. Again, though, I'm getting words like cow and green, nothing that can help me in my accounting business that I needed to be doing, but I was getting somewhere. And then I also was going to expat events. I joined mm-hmm. Internations. That was mm-hmm. another thing somebody had given yeah. me a tip on, which I met my, now she's still my best friend, at one of those events. She's Irish. And I ended up finding out that she was probably two blocks from my house. So that was the best thing mm-hmm. about the early months, was having that English speaking friend outlet. I would go to her house at, I think, 10 o'clock every mm-hmm. night and eat her leftovers and just drink wine and
you
connect.
You need that so much, and you need to be able to speak your language, and you need to be able to just be and
just be yourself. And honestly, some nights we would just both be on our phones, just being in the company of someone, not going back to my empty apartment in some strange city with no family, no friends, no nothing. Of course, FaceTime is amazing, and I cannot imagine doing this process without that technology. I give complete props and kudos to everyone who did it before this phase of the world, but it's not the same. And, you know, sometimes when you're crying, you don't want to video call anyone. You just want to, but there were a lot of nights like that where I was so upset. And I think everyone back home was just thinking, oh my gosh, Casey is amazing. Like, look at her. She's, mm-hmm. she moved to this new country. She doesn't speak the language. She's living this beautiful life. And I almost didn't want to call home and disappoint everybody and say, it's not so great, guys.
This is one of the hardest things. And I've said this so many times in podcasts and written about it. And it's like, you feel like they're all holding you to this standard that they see, or maybe you don't call them when you're crying. So you call them when you are smiling and you're happy, or at least you feel like, oh, I can put the happy face on. Exactly. Let's quickly call my parents.
Send them pictures,
and then it's they don't, it's really difficult to then say, actually, it's not going great. I'm not happy and I'm really upset. And then they don't know how to handle that. And then that's something you cannot handle via FaceTime because they cannot just give you a hug.
Yes.
And I found very much then they try to be like, but you're doing all this and this is great. And why don't you? And this kind of stuff. And it's not what you want to hear when you've had a really shitty day or week and you're like, I just want a hug. And I want someone to say, oh no, you poor thing.
Yeah.
And then you don't call them because you know you're not getting that. And exactly. But you need it. You need it so much.
Yeah.
And yes, it's of course it's an opportunity. It's great. And yes, you're living this is fabulous. Not many people get to do this. You're so lucky.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did feel so lucky. And so that was part of it. Yeah. It was that I didn't want to complain because I knew like there were other people in my shoes that wanted to be there.
Yep.
You know? Yep. So it was very, very, very difficult, but
yeah,
here we are. I'm still here.
And you made a friend, and honestly, I mean, it's all you need. You just need a couple of people around you to who've been through the same thing.
Exactly.
So your friend was the one kind of getting you out of that period of being just like, what am I doing? Questioning everything you've done and kind of feeling very lonely.
Yes. So we started going out and I remember my mom came for Christmas that year. So my mom had just gone home. My mom and my best friend, I think I had already had two or three visitors by that point. So everybody had left and it was the new year and we were really going into the kind of the worst period of my job, the busiest season. So I remember one night in January, she was like, why don't you start dating or, you know, try to figure out another way to kind of get out in there. And I, coming from Houston, I was in a very, very long relationship from college to up until the point I left. And I was very far from interested in that. But at the same time, I kind of saw her point in the fact that like, even if I just was just going to meet up with people, her points were, you know, you'll see a new part of town, you'll go to a new bar, you'll learn something new about our town, even if it wasn't maybe an Italian man, you know, there's plenty of expats, just getting yourself out there and taking your mind off of work, because that was my biggest issue, was that it was work and nothing else. And I felt like at that point, you know, of course the job was my number one priority coming over here, but also it wasn't that. I was coming to also enrich my personal life.
Well, and otherwise you wouldn't have left because you could have just done the job.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, up until this point, I had literally seen nothing of Rome other than the offices, and I hadn't traveled anywhere. I hadn't done anything. There was just no time. And I also just wasn't in the mood. So I was like, okay, I'll humor you. I joined a couple of apps. Again, I hadn't dated since college. And even in college, that's not, I hardly call that dating because you're just mixed up with those people anyway. So I had no idea what I was doing. I felt, for the first time in my life, I felt so old because I'm like, how do I use this Tinder swiping thing?
It's a different country. And
yes.
Different expectations, I guess. Yeah,
absolutely. Good point. Because I found out I downloaded Tinder, which I had heard the negatives of Tinder. And my friend she said, you need to specify on there what you're looking for. You know, I'm looking for drinks and socialization, nothing else. So I had that clear, but it didn't stop most people from assuming the other way. Anyway, so went through a lot of duds. It ended up kind of just being my evening hobby. I never met up with anyone for a long time. I just would message a lot of people. And like I said, most of them ended up being wanting to do things that I didn't want to do. But I did meet, I think I went on 3 or 4 dates. I wouldn't even call them dates, just met up with three or four people. The first one I remember was this really, really sweet Italian guy. And we went, he was so shy. And I think he really just wanted to work on his English, to be honest. So we were having drinks and it was the most awkward. It was adorable, but it was also really awkward because he could hardly speak any English. So it was kind of just like an hour of sitting there, mm-hmm. I don't know, hand gesturing to someone. And then at the end of the night, you know, we said bye and it was fun. But again, you know what? I'm laughing about it now because that was a time like I was happy. It was taking my mind. It was doing exactly
what
I was supposed to be doing. I was out and I wasn't mm-hmm. thinking about, you know, mm-hmm. the negative things. So anyway, then I think probably it was sometime around February, we were getting really close to the end point of my job. Again, I didn't have much time, but one of the girls told me about this app called Bumble and it sounded way safer than Tinder. Let's say it that way. So I guess the women have to accept the chats and just maybe was a little less risque than, mm-hmm. than the other. So anyway, I started chatting with this guy named Antonio on the app. And I saw from on the dating apps, there's very little information, but one of the things, if you want to put is like where you went to school. And I noticed that he had a university in California on his profile. So I thought to myself, okay, at least if anything,
you could communicate.
This guy's English should be maybe not great, but better than the first mm-hmm. guy I went on a date with. So sure enough, we started chatting and at least in writing, his English was mm-hmm. great. This was another thing I found that some of the guys I think use Translate on their phone and then you would meet up with them and they actually couldn't verbally speak English.
Oh yes. Oh my God. That's possible now, isn't it? Yes.
Of course. No, I still do it right now because I meet up with people and they're like, wow, your Italian's not as great as it was when you were writing. But anyway, so we talked every few days, just mm-hmm. very polite chit chat and getting to know each other, things like that. So it was March because we went on our first date at the beginning of March. He messaged me one day and said, you know, he had told me at this point that he worked at a hotel and it was at this point that I realized he wasn't even in Rome. He was in Tuscany. And I thought to myself, how is it possible that we're talking? Because I had my app set to, I only want to talk to people that are within, I think of 30 miles is what I had mm-hmm. set my radius to. And I guess we both found out that because he said the same thing. He's like, wait, you're in Rome. Mm-hmm. I took the train to Milan and back for work a lot. So we assume at this point that the only glitch in the system was that maybe one day when I was on the train, I was passing by here and he was on the app and I was on the app. And so we matched thinking that we were in the same town, but we weren't really. So that was kind of
So how far away was he?
It was 2.5 hours from where I was in Rome. So at that point I was like, oh, mm-hmm. that's a bummer, you know, unless he ever comes to Rome, but I don't really see the point in, you know,
it's not like an easy, it's not an easy starting point.
Exactly. I had a company car, so I had a mm-hmm. car, but again, I was not about to go meet a strange man in a strange country that I met on a dating app because maybe I've listened to too many true crime. I don't know. But, anyway, he mentioned to me that he, you know, he worked for a hotel and he needed to go to some wineries and try some wine to mm-hmm. stock his cellar for the next year and asked me if I was interested. And so I thought about it for a few days and my Irish friend was like, go. So we had this whole deal. She and I concocted this major plan of, you know, communication and tell her where I am when I'm there. And he, at the time, this felt very creepy, but he sent me all these different train options. He's like, you could take the train here and I'll pick you up, or you can mm-hmm. take the train here and I'll pick you up, or you can. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's weird. Now that I'm married to him, obviously part of what he does for the guests here is, you know, helping them. But I was like, no, it's okay. I'm just going to bring my car. That way, in my head, I'm like, I need an escape route for sure. I'm not going to just take the train to some random town and be on my own. So I was like, no, I'll just drive up. It's a Saturday. I have a car. It's fine. So just tell me whatever the name of your town is, and I will drive to you. So he sent me the name of the town on the phone, and I Googled it to see the distance. And when I Googled it, you know, you get those images. Mm-hmm. There was really many of the images were the same thing of this really tall bell tower. And it was just striking this chord in me that I had been there, or I had maybe on one of the trips with my mom. So I opened it up and I started scrolling, and it was at that time, I think I put two and two together, that because there's only really one hotel in this town, there's other B&Bs and mm-hmm. small places, but there's only one hotel. And so it was at that point in time, I realized, I don't know if you remember from the beginning of my story, but my mom and I stopped at this castle in Tuscany. And that's what drew us back the second time when we came and stayed here.
I'm getting goosebumps. I'm like,
I know. So I'm sitting there, just my jaw is to the floor, and I'm saying, oh, wow. My God, I didn't know him, but I knew his father. So when my mom and I came on that, I know. When we came on that second trip, we came and stayed here at this property.
Yeah.
And it was the end of their season because it was January. We were the only crazy Americans traveling mm-hmm. in central Tuscany in January. It was so cold. And we stayed here at the property. And my mom remembers Antonio carrying our bags to the room and saying, okay, I'm leaving. I'm going to California. This is like the end of the season, but we stayed here for 3 nights. We did a cooking class with his dad, private cooking lesson.
So crazy.
And so I called him back and he said, okay, do you know where you're going? And I said, yeah, I'm laughing because he's not going to tell some girl on a dating app that he owns a castle, because
yeah,
probably not going to pick up the right kind of girls. And I said, you know, what's crazy. I've been to the town that you live in. Just messing with him here. And he said, oh yeah, that's crazy. I'm like, this is a really small town. And I said, yeah, there's a castle there, a hotel castle. And I stayed there with my mom. And he was just silent, just radio silence. So he knew the gig was up. So that, I think the next 2 days before, that was like Thursday. We weren't going to mm-hmm. go out until Saturday. So the next 2 days we were just, I was going on Facebook. Luckily at that time I had posted pictures on Facebook. So I pulled up, I'm like, look, here's me and your dad. Here's, you know, before.
Oh, that's just, I'm still processing. I mean, this is how, what a coincidence. I mean, that's insane. So had you told your mom, had you said, hey, I'm going on a date with this guy?
Well, actually I called her before I called him. And she said, no, is his name Antonio? She remembered his name.
Wow.
Name. Isn't that crazy?
That is just so. Oh.
So that.
Yeah, this is amazing.
That really, I guess, eased my worries of mm-hmm. going on a date with a strange man in a foreign place. So anyway, I drove up on Saturday. We went on. I tell everybody this was like the bachelor style day. Of course, mm-hmm. I arrived here. He had cooked a plate of pasta. We had a plate of pasta here. We went to a winery. Then he took me to dinner. And then there's near our town, they're famous for the thermal hot springs, the natural hot springs. So we did that. And I mean, I think from that Saturday until he opened the castle for the season, we were seeing each other every weekend. I mean, we were, mm-hmm. it was like, we just clicked immediately. So
I'm still blown away how
no, the serendipity of the story is still, and the fact that, you know, I knew his dad, not knew, it's not like I.
Well, you remembered and you had, you know,
exactly. Fond memory.
Oh, well, obviously meant to be. I mean, you know, this is, you know, this is a movie in the making. I mean, this is, right. you can have all these, you know, images in my head of, you know, vineyards and your friend who's like, no, no, do it, go.
Yeah. Right. I think I remember losing cell service on the date. And she, when we got back to cell service, was texting me, where are you? Are you okay? Are you, you know, totally fine. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened then? So you're in Rome, he's in Tuscany. How are you making this work?
So that started the it was really nice then for that period, because every weekend we would see each other almost. What was tough was then, this is a seasonal place that we have here. So it's open basically from April to the end of October. And so once April came, he said, "Hey, I'm having a really nice time with you, but if you want to see me, like, this is where I live and you have to do the work." So that was a little bit of a, I mean, it was wonderful and I loved it, but it was also, okay, I'm going to go see this guy every weekend rather than, again, exploring and traveling and doing things that I kind of had set out to do here. I did already have a number of things booked that first year that I wasn't going to, you know, take back. So I did do a number of traveling things that year, but most of the time I was here and just spending time with him. When you have a seasonal place like this, it's work every day, all day for months. But then you get you have a different life. It's basically two lives that you have, in the off season. So it was fun. And he kind of took that stress off of work. Then around the summertime, things weren't working well with the first team that I was with, in Rome. So they switched me teams and I was working under a new manager who was actually another expat, but she had been in Rome, I think, 8 years at the time. So she wasn't Italian, but she also wasn't like going through what I was still going through at the time, but it did help tremendously. I'm so thankful for her and everything she did for me. And at that point in time, I started kind of thinking, okay, with the weekends, with this guy, I guess you could call him my boyfriend at this time, and this new team, maybe I can do this. I'm working there. I'm getting the hang of the language, kind of, not really, but
being in a relationship probably helps. Or did you speak English with each other mostly?
We speak English with each other, which is another, that's a downer part of that, because everybody thought, oh, you have an Italian boyfriend. But so he spent most of his years, he moved to the States when he was 6, and then he didn't move back here till his mid-20s. So he's pretty much American in my eyes. I know he's Italian, but and then we have this hotel here and the majority of our guests speak English, whether they're from North America or another country, German, whatever. English is the main language spoken here at the hotel. So I wasn't exposed too much. His dad is here. And so I was getting, he again speaks English, but when we would eat our meals and things like that, they would speak in Italian. So in one sense, I was getting more than I would have been getting if I was in Rome, seeing my expat friends. Cause that's kind of a downside also of just hanging out with your expats, is that you're not really immersing yourself. We got through the summer, then the fall came and I found out that I had to go back to that same team again for the next busy season. So I kind of went in this down spiral again. I thought to myself, I just didn't, you know, we just didn't mesh well. And I felt like nobody there really took my capabilities seriously and what I was doing. I was basically kind of demoted down to, which I have no problem doing things that are below what I would have been doing in the States, but it was just so many things. Going to speak to the clients, again, having zero Italian, they didn't really respect me or, you know, want to waste their time with me. So it was really rough. But so I think at the end, towards the end of that first full year, I said to Antonio, I said, okay, I can't do this anymore. What should I do? We were pretty serious at that point. And he said, well, you know, you could always move in here and try working here with me and my dad. So I, you know, like I said, I had been here every weekend and I got along with everybody. I said, okay, well, let's do it. So oh my gosh, I did it again. I packed up all my stuff at the so I finished that busy mm-hmm. season there in Rome and packed up what little things I did have. Because most of my stuff is still in my mother's house in Houston because I was only supposed to be gone for 2 years. So
yeah, anyway, I mean, this is,
you know, I think she started garage selling my stuff now, but that's okay. But anyway, so I moved in with him. I finished the season. I moved in with him in March. I guess we had been dating a year at that point in time, moved in with him. Mm-hmm. And we went on a trip to Bali that month before we started work here, which was so much fun. We did this little surfing camp retreat. He's a big surfer, California mm-hmm. guy. So anyway, so we opened here in April and we started working. And so this was my very first experience not being in the big corporate world. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not only not being in the corporate world, but also working alongside my boyfriend and my boyfriend's dad and in a company
in a business
that they had run mm-hmm. by themselves for 20 years. So it was a lot of changes, not only for me, for them. Mm-hmm. And then let's throw in the fact that I moved from Houston to Rome, to a town that has about 1600.
I was just going to say that's, and not knowing really anybody other than those two.
No yeah. one. And I, mm-hmm. you know, left my company car back in Rome. So mm-hmm. I had no car. Mm-hmm. Antonio had a car, but it was a standard and I don't know how to drive a standard. So I had no means of transportation mm-hmm. for myself. I knew no one and the town was, mm-hmm. is super small. So I was kind of, I felt honestly like I started over again, completely from scratch. And then the Tuscan dialect here, I'm like, they might as well be speaking another language. I was just beginning to understand the Romans. And then I moved here and I was like, wait, they're not speaking Italian, but they are. It's just, they've got these different twins and, you know, so.
Oh, that's the beauty of Europe where you have small countries. I mean, small compared to the US, but the regions are so varied. Mm-hmm. In such close proximity too. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I feel like of my journey that, and I think one of your questions ahead of time was the hardest part challenge as a couple so far, that 100%. Yeah. Not only that, you know, he was also then having to take care that my paperwork changed because I left that company. Mm-hmm. So they had to put me under the visa here, which they had never done for anybody before. So he had all the stress of, I couldn't do any of that by myself. I couldn't go to the office and speak for myself or do anything. So I kind of felt like his child at times, like, you know, felt very disrupted.
It's not the healthiest, like, balance in a new relationship. I totally empathize. Exactly. Yeah.
So I felt very, I felt like a burden a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. It was very stressful for him too, because, you know, the Italian bureaucracy, you call, they say, bring these documents. You stand outside for an hour to get inside only for them to tell you that you're missing a document that they didn't tell you to bring. You know, it's beyond frustrating. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we made it through the rough part. I think the summer was like the height of the roughness. And then the fall kind of came, which also drew towards the end of the season. And we kind of, I think, found our footing. I found my balance here with the business and what were my responsibilities and what everybody expected of me, and which I needed to know what, you know, I need hierarchy. I need structure. I am very much a structured person, and my husband and my father-in-law are, you know, they just do it because it's just natural to them and they do whatever.
But it's so hard to do that when you're in a relationship with someone and they're supposed to kind of tell you what to do. And that sounds very stressful. And also it is something that you don't, when you it's a new relationship, you don't expect those things or you don't anticipate those. And and so you, it's really difficult to discuss that too, I guess. Yes. And I can't even, I mean, it's like you just get thrown in and you have these idealistic ideas about the whole thing. And you think, oh, this makes our relationship so much easier to be in one place. And then, but actually, and it's his business. It's his, it's not like he's employed there. He's actually running this.
Right. So that was a lot. And I felt finally when I felt like, okay, I was confident what I was doing up there. Mm-hmm. A lot of it too, of our job, I say we now because we're married and I think mm-hmm. next year we're going to kind of take more of the reins ourselves, but, you know, sending guests out on excursions and giving them directions and telling them where to eat and doing all these things that I, again, had no clue because mm-hmm. I haven't lived here for 20 years. So he kind of was like, thrown. I remember when we were dating, actually before I moved here, he'd sometimes send me up to the reception desk. He's like, can you just go sit up there? So if anybody needs anything. So I said, sure, of course. And I'd go sit up there and somebody would ask me something. And again, I'm this person where if I don't know the answer, I get so flustered and I hate it. I hate not knowing things. So it was a lot. It was a lot to like learn everything and get confident with people that are here trusting me with their vacation of, you know, where to go, what to see, what to do. So we finally found our footing. And I think at that point we were like, you know what, let's get married.
So
we got married the next March, 2019. And then we got pregnant that summer. And then, so my first child was due March, 2020.
Oh, yes. The famous,
famous 2020.
Yes. Oh, wow. Mm.
So again, let's see, let's say that from, I'll even go, of course, before we got married, but the few months before we got mm-hmm. married up until March, I was just on cloud nine. I'm like, I can do this. I'm here. We went and bought a car. We traded in our car. We got an automatic car so I could drive, which that in itself, just being able to go mm-hmm. to the store to buy what I need for myself instead of having to send someone to the store and, you know, do things like that. Mm-hmm. So that was huge. And everything was great. I learned how to cope with the fact that everything here is closed from 1 o'clock to five, everything, all the time, every day. Nothing's open on Sunday. Forget it. If you need an emergency, anything, it's done. You know,
this is like the real Italy now.
This is the real Italy. And this is another thing of like expectations mm-hmm. and reality of, you know, when I got to Rome, I was thinking, oh, this famous lunch pause. How does that work when, well, we didn't have that big lunch pause in Rome, but here they do. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, learning the new Italy, but anyway, getting through everything. So then we went to Rome in January, at the end of January, 2020. I had still this guy that was cutting my hair. I was obsessed with him. So I would go to Rome just to get my hair cut. I know I was that person. But anyway,
shall I tell you what I just did?
Tell me.
I was in California this last weekend. So we used to live in California. So we used to live in the Bay Area. And I had a hairstylist in Austin, the time we lived in Austin, who I loved. And she moved to San Francisco like 2 years ago.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, I'm in the Bay Area. I looked her up and I booked an appointment with her.
That's awesome.
So I'm like, oh my God, I just flew from the East Coast to the West Coast to see my Austin stylist. How global is that?
That's fine. I got my hair cut here in town one time. Mm. She charged 20 mm. euros. 20.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it didn't turn out. I'll take the train to Rome. I get to see my friend. I get to have a nice plate of pasta. I get my hair cut. I come back. It's fine. So anyway, that day, actually, it's funny now looking back at it because my husband and I were reading the news. Again, I was, what, 7 or 8 months pregnant at this point. And that was the first case of COVID in Italy on that day. So I remember on the train that day, my husband is a complete germaphobe. And we had wrapped our scarves around our mouths. Mm-hmm. And I remember my Irish friend saying, you guys are insane. You're like overreacting. There's nothing wrong. Like it's fine. And this was in January.
Yeah.
And so things started escalating and it wasn't, I think my mom, so my due date was the 11th of March. My mom was set to arrive on the 9th of March. And, I'm getting goosebumps just telling the story, but on the night of, I think it was the 8th, we were watching the news with the prime minister, and that was the night that he said, you know, we're closing the country. And still really hard for me.
I remember that time. I mean, clearly everyone does. Like you said, it goes from this, should we be more careful? What is this? What's going to happen? To then actually being like, I'm this expat who's lived abroad for so long, but always knowing that if you need to, you can book a flight, you can be in the other place the next day.
Yeah,
that was always my deal. This is as long as I can do that, this works for me. But all of a sudden, like you said, it's like this option is taken away, and you're like, this is not part of the deal. I cannot live like this. Oh, and then for you at that point,
So for me, I remember, I couldn't breathe that night, just thinking, I'm about to have a baby.
And how are you going to do that?
That was the biggest part. That was the biggest part for me, was my mom's not going to be here, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've been counting on that for all those months.
So anyway, that was crazy. So, you know, I went into labor. Italy was in such a panic. If you remember seeing the news and everything, it just hit us so hard and so fast that nobody really knew what to do. We just knew that there were certain rules that had to be followed, and they were very strict and very serious. And so we got in the car to go to the hospital. We had these documents, of course, papers. Italians love papers. You had to fill out a paper saying like who you were, where you lived, where you were going, and like the reason. So we got in the car. My father-in-law took us, and he took Antonio and I. And I knew, like, the whole way there, I was just hyperventilating because I didn't know what was going to happen when we got to the hospital. I didn't know. And, you know, telling a story now, there's so many women that have gone through it, but I was literally one of the very first. And I'm like, if they tell me that he can't come in there, I'm panicking because I didn't speak Italian. I'm going to an Italian-speaking hospital. And if they don't allow my husband in there, how am I going to communicate anything?
This is the most extreme experience of your life. And you have, and
And so I just, you know, we get there and I feel like I'm shaking now because I was shaking then. And I'm thinking as we're walking in, and, you know, they hold their hand out to him. They say, you need to stay here. And he's trying to explain to them, you know, they send me back, they strap the things around my stomach, they get me going. And now that I've had another one, I know, but this was my first time. I had no idea what was going on and everything. So long story short, you know, the funniest part is, now looking at pictures, we had painting masks because nobody had KN95 masks.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
My husband just had, like, you know, industrial painting masks that we were wearing. Well, I labored for 36 hours with a painting mask on. I could not breathe. Stephanie, I asked the nurse one time, I was begging her, I'm like, can I please take this thing off? And this was, you know, the COVID tests took days at this point. Yeah. They weren't these 24-hour quick things. They're like, and they told me, until your COVID test comes back, you can't take off that mask. So the first night I had to stay overnight, they sent him home. I cried. I called. I was on the phone with my mom in America, laboring for hours, because I was like, I'm going to have this baby without my husband. Like, there, it was just, but long story short, I waited until the next day. I ended up having her late the next night, and he was there. And then he ended up staying at the hospital because the nurses told him, they're like, we don't know the rules. If you leave, you might not be let back in. So if you want to be here with her, then you got to stay. So he slept in a plastic chair like this. So it was fine.
Anyone who's been in an environment like that, knows. I mean, you don't get any sleep. No one gets any sleep. And
no one sleeps at all. They kept telling me to sleep.
Wearing those masks, I'm just...
No, it was terrible.
I'm just seeing more, you know, more scenes for this movie. Because this movie is kind of a romantic comedy, but it's got...
Tragedy,
drama. It's amazing. So you, at least your husband's there with you.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, your mom, when was she able to come and see her grandma?
Following January.
Wow. Yeah.
The following January. So it turns out, I guess she probably could have come before she did, because she was a family member, a direct family member of a visa holder, mm-hmm. which is me. But, you know, as I told you, everything was new and unknown. Nobody mm-hmm. knew. Yeah. So I tell people I have a hard time saying that it was sad, because it was such a happy time in my mm-hmm. life. I just had a baby and everything like mm-hmm. that. But I missed out, like so many also mm-hmm. have, but mm-hmm. I missed out on everything. Having family come over, visiting yep. the baby, meeting her. And then I also had this overwhelming fear anytime anyone was around that they were going to get my baby sick, you know?
And
so we hit out. Mm-hmm. Some people started to come towards, you know, during that year. And I always stayed in the house with the baby, which was mm-hmm. so sad, mm-hmm. you know? But that's just the way it was. And
that's how everyone did it. And it's like, I know a few people who had babies in that first COVID year and just said, it's almost like you don't know how to be with other people anymore.
Exactly. It was very difficult. And then our business, was completely shut down. We were closed for 19 months.
Wow.
So, you know, we were one of the few that mm-hmm. were able to hang on. A lot of the local family business weren't. We had a good year in 2019. We were actually prepared for one of the best years of our of our business in 2020. But you know, we were thankful enough to hang on. So at least we had that. We had space. We had a roof overhead, and we had food. That's what we kept saying. Mm-hmm. It was a very strange period watching the news and seeing all the sad things happening. It's everywhere around the world. And then mm-hmm. having this beautiful baby girl that just knew nothing of, you know, then going to doctor's appointments and her seeing everyone with masks, you know, think about it. She was almost 2 years old before she started seeing people's faces without masks on.
Yeah. So, I mean, as we said, the whole scenario of not being able to get on a plane or have people get on a plane and see you is, I mean, for me, that was such a poignant moment of realizing that my expat experience hinges on just that little fact that it's a game changer. As soon as you kind of like, I'm stuck where I am, and it kind of makes you reflect on your, you know, your ideals and your, how do you want to live your life and all that. So I found that a very kind of poignant moment. And how was that for you? Did you all of a sudden feel a little bit different about your life in Italy and being so far away? Well, how was that? Or did you just probably didn't even have time to think about that?
Honestly, no, I don't think I had any kind of like epiphany or anything like that. It just broke mm-hmm. my heart not being able to share that with people. But we actually ended up getting pregnant again in November. So I didn't go anywhere. Then the next year, I guess they opened the borders to Americans in July of this past year. So I had my second one in August. So I missed that window, I guess, where I probably could have gone home, but I was pregnant again. And again, COVID was so new. I'm like, I don't want to travel with my 1-year-old pregnant, no health insurance in America, which, goodbye, Jack. Like, you don't want to be in that position.
No, and traveling was so stressful. I was so stressed the whole time about just being at the airport and on the plane. And it was just, I don't think I would have traveled with a baby.
No, so the second pregnancy kind of took a much needed distraction from all of that, from not seeing my family, because I said, okay, it is what it is. It's good. Let's look forward to this. Then, you know, that sent me into a whole nother experience, because then at this point, my husband wasn't allowed into any doctor's appointments, zero for my second pregnancy. So I tell everybody now, this year, I feel like my language has evolved the most in this past year that it has mm-hmm. in my 6 years here, just simply because of all of the doctor's appointments I had to go to by myself. And getting by with what little there's Italian and then there or there's language and then there's medical terminology. And I think I was listening to my friend Alex's podcast and it's true. You learn these words. I thought I was prepared. And then they're saying these words. Thankfully for me, mm-hmm. it was my second time. And I think if that had been me in my first yeah. pregnancy, again, going through that, hearing all these words and these tests that mm-hmm. I had no clue what they were, it would be a whole nother thing, but I'm going to look at that as a positive thing. It was a little sad. Here we only get 3 ultrasound appointments. And I remember the first one seeing, you know, the heartbeat and everything. And so that was a little sad yeah. not having my husband there. And, I asked for photos and again, it's not like it was our first baby.
Still, it's so an experience. At least it was... Yeah,
exactly. So, that was part of that time last year. And then,
well, but I mean, also, I guess, in a positive light, then your husband had more time because of the business probably still being very slow to start with.
Exactly. When the Italians see us now, they all say the same thing. They say, well, you didn't waste time during COVID.
You kept yourself busy. Yeah. Yeah.
And actually that was probably the hardest thing last summer, having my second, mm-hmm. my second baby, because we went through the first one during COVID and Antonio helped me with everything.
Yeah.
Diaper changes during the day, whatever. And then again, like I told you before, our business is mm-hmm. all day work. So then I had a second baby. So I've got a toddler and a newborn baby, and my husband's nowhere to be found. So luckily my mom was here this time.
Yeah, that's amazing.
One.
Kind of making up for the first yes. one. Wow. See, that's kind of a very happy ending for, you know, that
yes.
that sad kind of stressful, very stressful time.
Yeah.
So,
I'm like I said, I know that we had it a lot better than a lot mm-hmm. of people, but it wasn't easy. And mm-hmm.
yeah.
you learn a lot about yourself and about, you know, your mental health and mm-hmm. your resilience
yeah.
in difficult situations. And I'm very thankful for it. I would never want to relive it again, but
no,
I'm thankful for it.
Anyone. Yeah. So what would you say now? I mean, having lived in Italy for 6 years, plus what's your very favorite thing about Italy and living there?
I think the obsession with food and drink is probably the best part. Just it's so important, and like they say, life's too short to eat shitty food or drink shitty wine. Mm-hmm. It's really true. That has been a new game changer, especially being here in this small town. Like yep. I told you, the shops close. The shops are closed on the Saturdays. There is no drive-through. There's no even delivery. You know, I know now all these delivery apps everywhere. We don't have that here. So, cooking, I've learned so much about cooking and preparation and, mm-hmm. you know, making the food go the long way, but also just making good food and sitting down and enjoying it. And
yeah.
There's nothing better that at the end of the day than sitting down and having an incredible.
And it must be nice to have your kids grow up with that.
Yes.
Food culture, because I think that's just if you experience that whole thing, like sitting down for a meal and taking your time to eat, I think that's such a precious thing, especially yeah. these days. And I mean, especially now, I mean, I've lived in the US now for 12 years. And it's so sad to see how it's not really part of the culture.
It's like not. It's
most families.
Honestly, mm. it wasn't when I was growing up either. I was involved in sports, and my mom spent majority of the night driving me to and from sports.
So you eat snacks in the car.
Yep. And so, and I remember one of my best memories, we finally went to America last, autumn. My baby was 2 months old when I flew home, but I was like, I gotta go home. I have 2 children now. My family haven't met, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of my favorite memories was giving my daughter a tortilla chip and a bowl of queso and saying,
yes,
you dip that in there and you eat it. And she was just looking at it. What is this? And I think she like licked it all off. It made my Texan heart so happy.
Yes. You know, it's so funny. So yes, it's this is the food item that comes up the most, I think, when I talk to Americans. And now clearly Texans, I mean, for the listeners out there, this is, you know, are you the second Texan or the third? Anyway, I know you're the third. You're the third Texan on here, and I think queso gets mentioned every time. So
it does. It does. And honestly, I've listened to so many of your episodes, and I thought, I've got to think of something besides queso because everybody talks about it. It's true. It's the best thing. Yeah. And you cannot recreate it. You cannot. Nope. I have learned how to make tortillas. I have learned how to make so many things, but queso, nope. You just can't do it.
Yeah, you just have to eat it when you're there. And,
yes. When I go home, it's probably gross how much Mexican food I eat.
Yeah. Is it? So anything else you miss from home?
I always tell people the same answer because I get that question a lot from the guests that come and stay here. But it's the people. It's honestly the people and the Mexican food. Those are the two things that I miss the most. And everything else I can live without. I honestly can. You know, my grandmother's still alive, and it's hard to seeing her get older and not being there. I've got two nephews in Texas. So, and then of course, all my good friends. I had a lot of visitors the first year when I was in Rome, when I think everyone was like, oh, she's only going to be there for 2 years. It's kind of slowed down. I've got the solid loyal ones that keep coming, but, unless I go home, it's very difficult to see people and to connect with people. A lot of my friends also have kids, so it's not realistic for me to have them get on a plane. But now it's like, I'm just looking for this year. It's wow. Buying a ticket for four people versus two. It's a big.
Yeah. We have a lot of friends who just simply cannot afford to get on a plane. No. And so, There's so many pros and cons to this existence.
Yes. But, like I said, we're lucky that we have this kind of communication that we can.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, this is kind of, it's true also like within a country, especially this country. I mean, like I said, I just flew to California. That's flights almost as long as the flight to Europe. So
that's true.
From here. And also not cheap at all.
No,
so it's,
not right now.
It's not. It's and probably these coming few years are going to be a rough ride for anyone. So yes, FaceTime and all those media are fabulous, and we just have to appreciate the times when we do see people. Totally.
Absolutely.
And I kind of feel like the whole COVID period has everyone's learned to use the media more and has become much more appreciative of time spent together. So that's. I feel like it's been a good thing, like stuff that we were used to only being able to communicate electronically. People now, most people have kind of learned that. So I like that. I like to think about that as the most positive thing about this whole period. Anyway.
Yes.
So what in terms of, I'm just going through my little list of questions. Because I mean your story is just, like I said, it's a movie. It's got to be a movie. Well, anyone listening who's got contacts and, you know, I just love it. It's, is there anything about Italy that you were completely surprised by because it's just not what you thought it would be?
I think it's hard too for me to answer when I was looking at your, you know, pre-questions. It's hard because I feel like my time here in Italy is so separated from my Rome and my Tuscany periods. You know, also I worked with a lot of different, as I said, I worked mostly with Italians in Rome, but there were a few expats, but just the acceptance of like, oh, you're not Roman or you're, you know, that I feel I was a little unprepared for that part of, it's kind of like being from Texas. Oh, you're from Dallas, Dallas and Houston. It's kind of like that here, but with, you know, the different areas. So I guess I don't know why I wasn't prepared for that, but that kind of surprised me. I also expected everyone to just be so jovial and happy And again, that's coming from my vacation mentality, my vacation Italy mentality, and my living here mentality. And I think mm-hmm. things change tremendously once you start to learn the language and you start hearing what people say about you. that part was mm-hmm. rough. So that, you know, that surprised me. And then another thing too was hearing like all the yelling, even here. So when I first started visiting my now husband, and mm-hmm. I would hear him and his father talking, and they would just always be yelling. The yelling is a lot. It really
is like the episode with Jen. She talks about that, right? How how she started yelling.
It's true. You kind of catch on to it, but it's like, if I yelled at someone like that, mm-hmm. I wouldn't talk to them for another week. But then 2 minutes later, they're like high-fiving and doing mm-hmm. whatever. Obviously not that big of a deal, but they just get so heated here. So that part kind of surprised me too.
Yeah. Wow. And so let's wind it up. And I'd like to ask actually two questions. To finish it off, I always ask this at the end, how, when you really miss your home country and maybe specifically Texas, is there anything that you do to help with the like homesickness? Is there any food you cook or ritual or tradition that you have imported into your own family?
I hate to sound like everyone in your Texas podcast, but yes, I do cook Mexican food. But I also am a big baker, and mm-hmm. I love baking things, especially with peanut butter, because it's so strange here. And I think the Italian sweets aren't actually that sweet. So mm-hmm. I find that when I have like my sweet tooth craving, nothing really satisfies me other than my own American recipes. So, you know, peanut butter cookies and brownies. And I went to this summer camp in the hill country of Texas, actually the same one that Alex went to. And there's this special cookie recipe that only a select few get to have. And that is by far my most comforting thing mm-hmm. to make, those cookies. They just make me really happy. Bring back a lot of memories.
That sounds good. I do that too. I bake German cakes. I love it. There's something about it. And also something that you can share with your family, with your kids, and kind of have the kids learn to appreciate that, because I think that's such a big thing too, when you grow up in a different country and, you know, your children don't have the same childhood that you did. And it's something that you kind of, you crave that little connection where you're like, it's, because that's a hard thing, isn't it?
Peanut butter. I can't handle it. She hates peanut butter. I'm like, who are you?
It's just people don't grow up with it. And then it's just not, or it's used in a different way. And it's not, it's also, you can't get good peanut butter in Europe. I'm sorry. That's a very blanket statement, but
they're getting better. Even since I moved here, there's better selection, but you're right. It's not the same. But even I remember a birthday party a few weeks ago, I brought some cinnamon rolls to the birthday mm-hmm. party here in town, and the moms were looking at it. What is this? And I'm like, there's cinnamon in it. It's like a bread. I was having to describe it like it's bread, but there's cinnamon sugar. And the kids were just gobbling it up. Like, I'm like, there's probably a lot more sugar in there than they're used to, but I feel like Italian kids eat a lot more sugar in general, but it's mm-hmm. not so compressed into one thing. Like, they eat a lot of things throughout the day, but mm-hmm. our cookies and our cakes are just wham, so much, mm-hmm. so much inside of it.
And final question, what do you think if I asked your husband, what would he say?
I probably wouldn't like the answer. No, I'm just kidding.
What would he say is the most Italian thing about you? What have you adopted and that you never did before?
Definitely my ways of cooking and not wasting anything. I think this mm-hmm. is a really good thing that I've learned here about how wasteful we are in the States in general. And, you know, the leaves off of the cauliflower, you know, making a vegetable broth with everything, and, you know, reutilizing chicken bones and, you know, just all these different things that you can make so much food with one thing. And in the States, it's just trashed, or it's just, yep. you know, it's, or I know, again, blanket statement, I know not everyone does that, but in general, I have mm-hmm. found myself now to be much, much better. And he'll say the same thing. Sometimes he comes in, he goes, "Whoa, where did my wife go?" So absolutely. I'd say that's it.
Oh, that's great. So it's all good. It's all positive.
Yes.
I love it. Yeah. Well, this has been really fun. I mean,
thank you so much for having me.
What a story.
The story is so long and complex, but
that's what, you know, living abroad and over years and years is doing. It's like life is, I mean, it's complex for everyone and people move yeah. and do all that. But I think there's a lot of things that just are added to the mix when you leave your country.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for making the time.
Absolutely. I also, before we get off, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. And thank you for doing this podcast, because as I told you in my email, if I knew about your podcast before I moved, or even when I was in like the thick of things, I feel like it would have helped me so much. So I really hope that this helps other people too, because it's really incredible.
Well, that's why I do it, just so, you know, people don't feel so alone.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you go into that spiral and you have all those thoughts where you're like, oh, I feel so guilty for feeling yeah. crap all the time. But all you need is other people go like, yep, I know, yeah, I hear you.
I know
but thank you anyway. All right, well, I'll let you go and enjoy your mom. And
thank you so much.
Take care, bye.
All right, bye.
Thank you so much, Casey, for those kind comments. I mean, this is why I do this. I really want to share expat stories just so people don't feel alone and people listen and can recognize themselves and, you know, learn from it, take something away from it. There's so many facets to this way of living. Oh, what a story. I just love how much positive energy comes across from Casey. And so hopefully she's made your day a little bit brighter too, wherever you are. Please, please, please share this story with all your friends and family, people at work, and wherever people are in need of some good vibes. And I say this not only to get more listeners, of course, I mean, that would be nice too, but, and yes, spread the word about this podcast, but also and mainly because I just want people to listen to Casey. She's such an amazing storyteller, and can't you just see a movie when you listen to it? I totally can. As I said during the interview, I just had these scenes, like really vivid scenes in front of my eyes. And I think it would make a really good story. I have put links to Casey's Instagram and the castle website in the show notes. And well, if you don't see the movie potential when you look at those pictures, then I really can't help you. Make sure you have a look at that. And as I said, share the episode and this podcast wherever you can. A little bit of housekeeping to finish off. I am seriously bad at promoting myself. It just doesn't come naturally to me. And I don't have any sponsors or any monetary input here. I love doing what I'm doing. And for now, I'm able to do it this way. But I do have expenses related to the podcast. So if you ever feel like you'd like to support me, you can buy me a coffee. It is super easy. I have a page on ko-fi.com where you can make it a donation. It's all very clear and straightforward. And I've put the link and all the details in the show notes. Also, please leave me a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening. It might sound a bit preposterous to ask for 5 stars, but honestly, that's how people find podcasts. And why not give me 5 stars? You don't even have to explain anything. Just leave the stars, just click the 5 stars. But of course, positive feedback is also very welcome. If you do have any other comments, let's say constructive criticism, etc., then please message me via my Transcontinental Overload Facebook page or via Instagram. Again, I have put all the links in the show notes. So, that's it for today. I hope you have a good week. Stay happy and healthy, and see you next time.